We love our sports, don't we? We play, our kids play, and we are increasingly involved in indulging our allegiance to our teams. Over the course of the last couple of weeks, sports outlets have run story after story about players and fans behaving badly. Would you agree that the level of behavior on the fields and in the stands is getting somewhat less than civil? With Jesus as the Lord of all of life, what difference should our faith make for how we play and watch sports? And how can we effectively teach our kids about integrating their faith into their engagements with sports? That's what we're addressing on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody. I'm Walt Mueller at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, back in the saddle after a summer sabbatical. And I know if you've tracked with Youth Culture Matters over the summer, we had some shorter versions that we put out for parents, some shorter episodes. And now we're back into our long-form podcast and speaking about some of the cultural things. And by the way, getting back, man, just the world of sport just this week has pushed us to address this topic just because of some of the things we've seen. You know, thinking about the behavior of players, the behavior of folks in the stands, the behavior of folks on the sidelines. I was just thinking about, as an Eagles fan, you know, the big spitting incident in the Eagles game against the Dallas Cowboys and how that all unfolded, who was at fault, who occasioned the whole thing and who responded maybe in ways they shouldn't have. You know, just dirty play in so many ways. And the NFL has had to deal with that. The new taunting rules that are in the NFL, which we saw enforced. I didn't go on and find out how many taunting penalties were called last weekend, but I know there were a few. And I think it's good that the NFL is pushing on that. I'm also a Phillies fan, and I know it's blown up our social media here, my phone, my computer, my Facebook feed. But the whole story, if you didn't catch it, you can look online, of the game last week that the Phillies had in Miami against the Marlins. And a home run ball was hit in the left field. And there was a scramble, as there always is, for the ball. And a father came up with a ball, gave it to his son on his birthday. I don't know, the kid looked maybe 10 or 11. I don't know. And immediately, a woman who thought the ball should have been hers came down the aisle and was demanding the ball. And eventually the father just said, okay, all right, you want it, I'm giving it to you. Of course, the kid made out well with all kinds of other stuff when people saw what happened. The Marlins and the Phillies gave him a bunch of stuff. But that woman is all over the internet. She's now known as the Philadelphia Karen. And so all kinds of conversations, about that. Then it was the incident. Chris is a Bills fan. And we were talking about the Bills fan that, you know, gave a slap to Lamar Jackson. That was at the end of the game, right, Chris? Was that at
fourth
the end?
Quarter?
Fourth quarter. And Lamar Jackson pushed him back. And if what we saw was right, that guy, that kid's been, or young man's been banned from future games. I don't know if it's the Bills or the NFL or what, but so that's going on. And I found some other things here. Just parents accused of dangerous behavior at football games. This came out on Sunday, a news story from September 7th. You're all familiar with the Oklahoma drill, where two guys go at each other, one with a ball and one trying to tackle. And these huge dads are getting in on this Oklahoma drill against kids that are like 8 and 9 years old. And there's great concerns about, rightly so, about, you know, concussions and hurting these kids. And there's some videos out there on that. So, and that's just a smattering of stories. So we decided, hey, let's talk about this and let's talk about, you know, how we can best respond to these things as believers, how we can prepare our kids for a lifetime of play to the glory of God with great sportsmanship. Parents, the same thing as sports parents. I know we're going to get into that a bit. And all of us as spectators, because I'll be the first to admit, I get wrapped up in these things. Had a conversation with a friend who's a Commanders fan, who watched the Eagles game with me, and we were both talking about how stressed you get with that. So I thought, boy, it'd be great to invite some friends who I think have great priorities, great ministries, know the scriptures, are sports fans, have thought a lot about this, written some on this on the podcast, and these are all dear friends of ours. So I brought them in along with Chris Wagner, who's a Yankees fan, so you can draw your conclusions on Chris there. He actually went home right before we started to record and got his old Yankees hat, which that's fine. I'm glad you brought that, Chris.
It's a relic.
It's a relic. That's right. But I want to invite these guys in. Jason Engel's here from North Carolina. Jason, you can tell a little bit later, folks, about who you are. You're one of our research fellows here. Jason wrote a great parent prompt a while ago on youth sports and church participation. Man, a lot of people have asked for that. Youth workers are finding that super helpful. You can find that online at our site. Jay Montgomery's here. Jay is someone who we've spent a lot of time with over the last few years. Jay, I think it's fair to say you're a big man. How tall are you?
6'6".
He's 6'6". Yeah. Okay. So I'm accurate in that. And you actually played college football, and you were a lineman, I'm sure. Were you a defensive lineman?
I was a defensive
end.
Okay.
Defensive end. Yes. Okay. So yeah. Call Vic Fangio with the Eagles because we need some new edge rushers. And then, and you've got kids who are playing college football as well, and I know you coach, so it's good to have you here. And then Tim McAlpine's joining us from Canada. We figured we needed to get a Canadian hockey fan in here. Tim's one of our research fellows as well. So, guys, I'm just going to open the conversation up so we can, you know, chat about these things. But you guys are – you've all kind of walked through things with us in terms of cultural exegesis and looking at the culture in light of God's word and trying to figure out what's going on out there. But, and I'll just open it up. You know, what do you think from your vantage point where you are, all doing youth ministry, one working in a school, one coaching, what is your sense of the cultural stance right now on sports? And we want to talk about playing, spectating, coaching, the whole thing. I mean, what place does sport hold in our culture?
I'll jump in. I'll say one of the more detrimental trends I think I've seen over really a long, steady period of time is just more and more exploitation of sports on multiple levels. Speaking of youth and their engagement in sports, their participation in sports, it's much more about exploiting the sport for what they can get from it. That tends to be their relationship to athletics in a way that just wasn't there when I was a kid many moons ago. Even from a fan standpoint, it's more about exploitation now that we have so much sports betting that's dominating, you know, really every sport. We've come to the place now where at the end of games, a lot of times there are these comments that are being made about the final score and betting trends and these sorts of things. And so, you know, from a fan standpoint, it's much less about the joy of following your team or the joy of just of the sport itself, and much more about what can be gained from it, what can be exploited from it. And then from the participation side with kids, it's much less about recreation and being with friends and the enjoyment of playing the sport and even the formation of it, just more about the exploitation of it as far as what can I get from it both now and down the road in my life.
Yeah, Jason, let me follow up on that. I love that observation about the exploitation, especially for kids who are playing. And I think I know where you're going with this, and I'm thinking this probably applies to sports parents as well. But, you know, in terms of what they can get from it down the road, what are you seeing?
Oh, yeah. It's so closely tied with entitlement, right? Parents and kids. But I think kids get this from their parents. It's reflected by them. And, of course, we all have a sin nature that's already inclined in that way. And so parents come in. They're already making a large investment now for their kids to participate. And so there's this inherent expectation as far as what their kids get out of it. And and you know, how much playing time they get and how much success they're enjoying. And you know, and it's so easy now for if they're not getting out of it what they believe they're entitled to, they just move to another team. And that really mirrors what we're seeing with NIL and transfer portals and all of the rest. So it just, you know, there's a lot less joy surrounding sports for the sheer enjoyment of the sport than there used to be, and so much more kind of this posture that's set by this idea of exploitation that I think is just really detrimental.
That's good. Those are good observations. What about you other guys? Anything you're seeing regarding the current cultural stance on sports that Jason hasn't hit?
Well, I think one thing, I mean, I'll preface with being a parent of a couple kids that are in the club sport world and even being a coach, and just the own temptation in my own heart to elevate sport into a place where it shouldn't be. I'd be lying if I said that doesn't exist. But I think one thing that has become more apparent over the last number of years as my kids continue to develop as athletes is the way in which the idolatry of sport can creep into the heart of a parent, which can then manifest itself in like lashing out at other players. And so hearing parents talk about these 12, 13, 14-year-old girls in a manner of just lambasting them and, you know, using language and terms that are so derogatory, so demeaning, and really just annihilating any sort of imago Dei. To me, it's become so apparent that we have elevated our own desires as parents for our kids and what we hope our kids get to do, whether it's a scholarship or and I think every parent, if they're honest, I would say we all have this temptation to think our kid is far better than they are, or there's some sort of special, unique athlete. I think I read a stat. There's like 400,000 girls that played high school volleyball in the States alone, and trying to explain that to my daughter here in Canada, who would love an NCAA Div 1 scholarship. And so I think for me, what's becoming more apparent is just the need for us as coaches, organizational leaders, and then specifically those of us that work within youth ministry, to just kind of continue to work with our families of just going, hey, we want to make sure that we're not adding to that culture where we are, you know, willing to become really verbally abusive towards children. And we wouldn't call it that. You know, if we would avoid using those terms because that sounds too harsh, but that really is what takes place. And I think it's been the older my kids get and the more competitive it gets, the more prevalent I kind of see it.
Yeah, I want to highlight a couple of things you said there, Tim, and mention, I forgot to mention, Jay coaches football, and you're coaching volleyball, right? Club volleyball, high school volleyball at your Christian
Yeah,
school
junior,
there.
middle school and club, yeah.
In Calgary up there. But what you just said about, you know, like desiring a scholarship. So the Aspen Institute, and we'll include a link to this study. They've done ongoing work on play and sports and the statistics on those sorts of things, trying to help parents navigate that and have realistic understandings. I believe it's called Project Play. We've referred to it before. But they just put out this data, and you're talking about volleyball. So of the high school athletes who are playing volleyball, the possibility of getting a Division I scholarship for males is 0.7%, or to get to play at the D1 level, 0.7%, and for females is 1.2%. So it's a very slim margin and chance, and yet, you know, these parents have these notions that, you know, my kid's above and beyond everybody else, and even if my kid's not getting playing time, that's the coach's fault because they don't recognize that my kid is above and beyond everybody else. And so we put these realistic expectations. And again, it goes back to what Jason said about, you know, exploiting for what they might get from it. So yeah, that's hey, can I just ask you, Tim, because you're at a Christian school, and without naming names and things like that, but do you see much difference, you know, as you think about youth sports and the pressure that parents are putting on, you know, are you seeing it in your situation there, with parents or maybe opposing parents?
So like within the context of the school, it really no. And like I think our athletic directors have worked really, really hard to create a culture of we focus on development. We're quite aware. We're a small school, so we just had our volleyball tryouts, and everyone who tried out for my team made it because I had 10 guys try out, and I even pulled up a couple young guys. When you get into our grade 9 year, they limit how many come. So I think there will be some that would argue that we are too competitive or too focused on winning because their kid didn't make the team.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's actually the intention here. But I mean, put any of us in a game situation and feelings and consideration of the kids and their emotional well-being can quickly get thrown out the window as a coach, as we really need that next
Yeah.
banner. So,
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
we're susceptible to it for sure.
Yeah. Jay, what about you?
Yes, I'll echo what both Jason and Tim had said. I think identity, how much a family will tolerate, endure, and even endorse what this type of behavior in the hopes that their child will be successful in sports and what they put up with whether it's coaches or time demands, schedules and travel, just all of that, that they'll put up and tolerate that for the sake of success in the sports arena. And back to the identity thing, I think the temptation too is this, and I found it in myself as a one, I had years of coaching, and then I've got a son who plays, and now I'm a fan and a dad. But my pastor challenged me years ago that some of the anxiety and adversities that I felt like my son was going through on travel sports, a lot of it was God working things out in me as a dad, and not necessarily my son's struggles unless I introduced those topics. And so once I figured that out, that I'd let him navigate those post-game conversations, it just freed him up a lot. Where I probably, like a lot of parents, put some of the stress about playing time and position and teammates and opposing teams. So I think I see that a lot as how all in families are, even in an 8-year-old, with their schedules and the character of coaches or lack of character.
Boy, you've prompted a couple of thoughts for me as I'm thinking about this, you know. So, and me having had kids who, you know, were athletes and played, you know, I found that one of, like, you're talking about what your pastor said to you and a little bit of self-examination and how the Lord was working in your life. You know, how do we measure some of the indicators of the fact that this has become too important for us or identity shaping for us? And I think about, you know, people I know who have invested a lot of time and a lot of money into youth sports for their kids, who there's an injury, and even if it's just an injury for a short time, or maybe for one season, or maybe it's career ending, or there's a benching, or a kid gets cut, you know, after all this, it just destroys the parent. In other words, the parent has a difficult time, you know, softening the blow for a child who's experienced this, and it's more like the parent is the one who feels like, you know, there's been some criminal, you know, action perpetrated against them. And I think when that happens, and we're all like, one of the things I like what you all have said is this is us, right? This is us at some level. So this is not us pointing the fingers here, but you know, you're trying to navigate this in your disappointment, you're angry, you know, you can't get through it and even get to the point to help your kid through it. And that seems to me, at least in my life, to be an indicator of, you know what, I've got my priorities out of order and I'm taking this way too seriously, and this is identity forming for me. One other thing I'll say, because I'm the oldest guy, obviously, on this podcast right now. So I've got a long view that you guys don't have. And I'll just share from my experience, you know, starting to play. I sent you guys a picture of my first Little League team, you know, 8 years old, the Robins. Now, that's not even – we were the Robins, you know, in around the Eagles or, you know, the Blue Jays, the Cardinals. Yeah, we were the Robins. You know, like what other kind of bird could you have that could just be a loser? But, you know, so when I started to play, and I played for a while and then, you know, got into high school and there was football and things like that, that what I remember is the only parents who came to a practice in youth sports were the coaches. And I'm going to say that many times the only parents who came to the games, you know, this is rec stuff, the East Abington Little League that I played for first. Yeah, there were parents there, but I remember my mom didn't come to all the games. And even with, you know, high school football like that. But here's another thing I remember about high school football, and that was that there were never – well, it was weird. We had an anomaly. But there weren't parents there at the practices. And I don't know if you guys see that now or not, but, you know, high school football team, let the coach coach. Go do your job. Go do whatever. We had one of guys who was, you know, my age who went on. He was good. He went on to play college football at a Division I school. His dad was always lingering over in the parking lot in his car, standing outside. He was the only extra person who was there watching this, and we all thought that is just flat out weird. And after my son graduated from high school, I went back one day. It was after school to get my daughter, who was younger, and my son played football. No parents went to the practices, but the next year with the incoming freshman group, there were probably 10, 12, 15 guys out there set up in lawn chairs every practice who were fathers. And I just think, you know, what does that say about us? What does it say to our kids? What does it say to the coaches? And we can get into some of that, you know, as well. So this is really good, just talking about some of the cultural realities. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, maybe some examples specifically of some things you've seen or experienced that concern you. And then I want to talk a bit about the difference between the way that the world approaches aspects of sport, whether that's play, spectating, or whatever, and the way you see these things playing out among professing Christians or in the church. In other words, are we countercultural? Are we living counterculturally to the way that the world, the flesh, and the devil are dictating how we approach our play, our spectating, our coaching, whatever it is. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back as we're talking about a Christ-centered approach, a biblically-centered approach to sports in a world that in so many ways has just gone crazy. We'll be right back. Hey, youth workers, it's happening again. The 4th Annual Northeast Youth Ministry Summit will be held from March 16 to 19 in the beautiful Laurel Highlands of Pennsylvania at the Ligonier Camp and Conference Center. We invite you to join us for 4 days of deep and practical youth ministry training, shared meals, worship, and community building all around this year's theme of Every Square Inch. We've assembled an experienced group of youth ministry trainers and practitioners who will lead you into a deeper understanding of how to raise up a generation of students who live out their faith in every square inch and moment of their lives. We'll gather for 6 large group sessions, and you can choose from 20 breakouts, and there's a whole lot more. Visit nymsummit.org for more information and to register. That's nymsummit.org. No matter where you live and are doing youth ministry, I hope you'll join us at the 2026 Northeast Youth Ministry Summit. Hey, listen, before we continue our conversation here about sports, I want to say something about the Northeast Youth Ministry Summit, because we're going to have our 4th one coming up in March. What is it, 16 to 19, Chris? March 16 to 19. This is the 4th one. And all 3 of these guys who are on the podcast here, along with Chris and myself, have been there. And they will be there again. And so if you want to hear and learn from them or have conversations with them, the community that exists there is just great, and we're really working hard to provide depth in the teaching. And just to say it again, the theme is every square inch. And it's all about the lordship of Christ, as Christ should be Lord of every square inch, every minute, second of our lives. And so we're going to talk about how to instill that in our kids and even do that in the area of athletics. In fact, I'll mention this. Ben Swar, who works with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, is coming to do a breakout. Ben is an NCAA wrestling champion and is working with students now, high school and college, teaching them how to bring honor and glory to God through their athletics, not allowing it to become an idol, but being a good thing that they can use as an object of worship. I don't know if any of you guys want to say something about the summit. I think it's always good for people to hear from participants and people who have been there the value of it.
I love the networking and the deep friendships that we have, student ministry in common, and being able to reconnect over the tables and over coffee. And it's just a wonderful training and a great 3 or 4 days of equipping and encouraging.
Yeah.
For us, my executive director comes down with me, and it's that this conference in particular has been instrumental and foundational, even in helping shape the culture of our school, just because of the rich teaching that we're getting. And it's dense in the sense that there's a lot, and you leave exhausted just from all that you've learned. But we're doing what we can to bring more down with us, because it's been so valuable for us.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Jason will be teaching there as well. So we get, Jason, you get great marks. That's what I love, with you. Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job. So, all right. Before we continue, I want to, a little bit about fandom now. I take a lot of heat. I take a lot of heat normally for everything, but for being a Philadelphia sports fan. And you guys know, doesn't matter if you're in the U.S. or Canada, you understand the stereotype of the Philadelphia sports fan, sometimes well-deserved, sometimes, overstated, but it's crazy. It's crazy. So I got to tell you a story. This was it 2009, Chris? Was that when we went to the playoff game? So
2008.
You're right. It was 2008. It was a different playoff game, I think. But the Phillies are in the playoffs and are playing the Brewers.
If we want to talk about 2009, that's fine.
No,
that's
we're not.
When the Yankees beat the Phillies in the World Series.
So I don't want you
bringing
that
up. We can
talk
about 2009 if you want.
Yeah. No, I don't want to. So anyway, I set myself up for that. So the Phillies are playing the Brewers. It's a night game. It's a playoff game. What I remember about that game, I say, because they listed it as one of the best games ever at Citizens Bank Park. That was when Victorino hit the grand slam. That was when Brett Myers had that long at bat, right? Was it Brett Myers against
Sabathia?
By CC Sabathia, and they got in Sabathia's head. It was a great game. So we're going down. Lisa's with us, and it was you and one of your college buddies. There were four of us, and we get in the car. And it's a Phillies-Brewers game. Chris is decked out from head to toe in Yankees stuff. And we're like, what? What are you doing? Why are you? This is not – the Yankees aren't even playing. And he's just so proud of his Yankees. So we pull into the parking lot, tailgaters everywhere in various states of inebriation, and just crazy. It's, if you've ever been to a tailgate at a Phillies or an Eagles game, Eagles are worse, but – it's just outlandish. And Lisa and I both looked at him and said, we're walking into the stadium now. You go ahead of us.
You're on your own.
Yeah, that's what we said. You're on your own. And I don't think your toes even hit the ground getting out of the car yet. And you started to be harassed. No end. Because everybody there's a Yankee hater. So,
yep.
Yeah.
All through the game, too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So all through the game.
Didn't stop me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard being a fan of another team and coming into one of our stadiums. But, yeah, poor Chris. Well, we didn't think so. It was your own dumb fault. All right, so here we go. Let's. I want to talk a little bit about what we said before, setting it up for this segment. Any other specific instances or situations, stories that you've seen, you've experienced that, has made you kind of cock your head to the side and go, man, we got a problem. I know, Jay, you talked about some of this earlier in the year. We were having a conversation about some of this. I don't know if you remember
right.
What it was. Yeah.
There was a sporting event, a local sporting event, where some parents and coaches and a team got out of hand, upset with officiating, so much to the fact that a coach went after one of the officials. Players had to restrain the coach twice. The coach was eventually dismissed. But what I got to sit back and watch was this unfold on social media, and how, once again, how often parents were affirming and encouraging the behavior of the coach for taking up for the kids and having their back. And it was awful to witness that you have 15 and 16 year old guys holding back a coach because he was so angry and upset. But how many parents were on board believing that he was justified? Yeah. It was, so that was one of the stories that I'm real familiar with.
Yeah. We don't show a whole lot of grace to officials. We just don't show a whole lot of grace to officials. That's for sure. Sometimes maybe we feel like they don't deserve a whole lot. But what about the difference? Are you all seeing a marked difference from where you sit between? I know, Tim, you've talked about your school situation. Yes, because you guys are deliberate on that. I mean, you're obviously in a situation where you've got a Christian school. You're working to instill that those good principles into the student athletes and into the spectators and the parents. I'm sure there's behavioral standards that, you know, rein people in, and we all need those for sure. But maybe in the wider range of things, when it comes to play and spectating, and whether it's watching a pro team or sitting on the sidelines at a youth sporting event, playing yourself. I always think about church league basketball or church league, you know, softball, which I've often said is the closest thing to hell on earth. You know, you pray at the beginning, you pray at the end, and then you just let loose on each other with no sense of right, wrong, morality, you know, giving honor and glory to God. You know, so, I mean, what do you guys see? I mean, where are we? Do we have deficits in the church? Maybe is the way I'm asking this. And we're going to, you know, by the time we end here today, we're going to talk about practical ways to push back on anything that we think is improper or out of order. But I'm just curious about your answer to that question.
I mean, I think one thing I've, more generally speaking, so I was listening to a podcast, and this guy was talking about, you know, and he was an athletic trainer for elite athletes, but he was saying that, you know, these young kids are playing more hockey games in a season than the NHL. And I, wow. You know, even the athletes that I train and coach, you know, this summer my wife, in all of her wisdom, was super intentional with our daughter in particular. And like, we actually just shut down volleyball altogether for weeks. She went and served at a camp, had nothing to do with the sport, didn't touch a ball. And when I'm talking to parents, there's actually this fear amongst parents that if my kid is not training all throughout the year, that they don't make the team next year. And I actually think that's cultivated by club organizers where they're kind of saying, like, if you don't keep up, someone else is going to pass you. And to me, that's kind of, it's gotten younger and younger, and it's newer in the sense that, like, I mean, I remember, like, I played college ball too. It was just volleyball, not football, which as physically demanding, Jay, just so we're clear. You know, like we had off seasons and seasons where we just did, you know, you do some training, but you actually got to rest. And I think we've eliminated rest. And I think we've actually, it has seeped into the church. It's seeped into Christian homes where we're going, like, our kids need to be participating in this camp and this training and doing all these types of things. And I mean, I feel it as a dad, you know, not just, but a pressure to make sure that my kids are staying on top of things. And when they're not, there's a detriment to their future. I had a conversation with a mom this week whose son, excellent hockey player, ended up making an age bracket above his age, but a AA, not a AAA team. And he did nothing for hockey most of the summer. He worked at a camp. And so we had a great conversation about, you know, I just said, I think the Lord is going to honor him, not necessarily with hockey, but in his heart, providing him more of that security and his identity and this peace that you know, Paul talks about flipping, like he's going to get that more because his identity is not going to be wrapped up in making this team. And I see it in our parents, you'll see it in church attendance, you'll see it in, and again, I'm not pointing fingers, we're guilty of it too. But I think we're going, like fear has crept in that if we are not keeping our kids busy all the time, we are not developing them. And then of course kids are like, the amount of kids that I see at like 14 wearing knee braces. I'm like, goodness sakes, if you're having to wear a knee brace at 14, where are you going to be at 30, 40, 50, you know, because we're just overworking and these kids are not getting the rest that I think is desperately needed.
Boy, I'm going to say something about that. You know, one of my bucket list items this summer while I was on sabbatical was to get to the Little League World Series. I'd never been there. It's only a couple hours away, 2 hours up the road for us to go up to Williamsport. And I took three of my grandsons up, age 11, 10, and 8, two of them being baseball players. Anyway, that was, you know, pretty amazing to see that. And what I've noticed, I mean, even back in the day, I went back and I watched, there's a video out there of like the final out in every Little League World Series. I think going back to 1948, we watched that afterwards. And just the advancement in the players, the advancement in the equipment, and the pitchers at 11 and 12 years old, the kinds of pitches that they throw and the command that they have, you know, and of course, you know, back in the day when I was coaching, it was, you know, tell the kids, you're not to throw a curveball. You're going to hurt yourself really bad. And you just wonder about the damage being done, you know, with some of this specialization. I was going to say something about that as well. Somebody at church was telling me a couple of weeks ago about a book they read called Range by David Epstein. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of or read this book, but it compares the training that Tiger Woods went through as opposed to Roger Federer, who did not specialize in just one sport. And the subtitle is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And so that's a, you know, that's something that we, you know, certainly need to be thinking about as well as we, you know, talk about our, you know, talk about our kids and some of the negative things that we're doing. Any other comments on that? The church and the world.
I'll just say I'm really struggling with understanding how believers will continue to occupy this space in many ways. And you know, going back to something you said just a little while ago, Walt, that kind of caused this thought to pop in my head. Sometimes I think that we can be naive in that we can leave our kingdom identity when we enter into certain spaces. I think this is true when we get online. Somehow we think that since we're typing and since we're interacting in a virtual way, that somehow the kingdom ethic doesn't apply there. We just kind of mold to the culture that's built there. I think the same thing with sports. You know, families are engaged in sports. They begin to mirror that culture instead of taking the kingdom to that culture, because it's really hard to live the kingdom out in that culture. And it is. But I had two conversations with two young guys over the last several months, and I've just recalled these. One is a guy that graduated from our high school, was playing college ball at a small college, and his entire future was up in the air all summer long because apparently due to NIL, due to the transfer portal, certain players on the team, their scholarship renews every year. There was no commitment by the school to this young man. So it got up into July, and he was still even wondering if there was a spot on the team for him and therefore a scholarship for him to attend the school. And it ended up being the case that the coach called him and said, thanks, but we don't need you. So that's one, like how do Christian students navigate that when they're trying to play sports? And I think you hit on this, Tim, you know, that's an identity issue. You know, how we process that, are we trusting in a God who is sovereign and good in every circumstance? Or are we truly banking our identity on my ability to continue and to succeed in this sport? The other conversation was with another young man who had played very briefly at a Christian university, and his taste of college athletics was so bad because of the rivalry that was there due to the NIL deal. He came in receiving zero NIL dollars. He was a lineman. And the team had decided to allot, it was a smaller school, so they had allotted every NIL dollar they had for linemen to one player. And so going in, there's not this team mentality. There's a bunch of guys who have a target on this one guy who just, You know, and so it's made me think, even if you're a college coach, how do you navigate this? How do you navigate the space without acting underhandedly? Because everybody else is acting underhandedly. So I think it does cause these questions to pop up. And this is why discipleship is so important. As we launch people into every, you know, to connect this with the summit coming up, every square inch, as we launch our people into every square inch of life, are they prepared to meet those challenges and to occupy those spaces as believers? And do they have a good understanding that there's going to be some suffering with that and that it's going to be very hard to occupy that space? And I think sports is one of those things. From youth sports all the way up, I just think it's going to be really hard for Christians to occupy those spaces and genuinely live out a kingdom ethic there because of the culture that's being created.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jason. I think about the parallels between how I've heard Christians talk about Christians in politics navigate politics. Well, everybody does this. Nobody's honest. You know, you got to lie, you got to cheat, you got to steal, that whole thing. And so, it's viral, right? It's contagious, and it's like a swirling, you know, whirlpool that we just get sucked into along with everybody else. So, yeah, that's good. That's good. Anything else about that, about how you see things, you know, maybe a little bit different?
One of the things, Walt, and Jason prompted me to think about this is also the character detachment, meaning who I am is not how I compete.
Yeah.
And that you can go out and behave a certain way in competition, whether we watch it, as you mentioned earlier, from the, you know, the trickle down was from the Thursday night football game with the Eagles, was the University of Florida had the same situation happen. And so I think that there's a mindset that I can go out and act a certain way because it's in the nature of competition. But when I walk off the field or walk off the court, that's not really who I am. And that's a hard place to be passing on to our students and how they follow Christ in their huddles and on the sidelines and at practice. And not to mention also how we push that out and share that with parents as well, and how you can root for your team and root for your children to be successful in other ways than just performance based on these teams.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that comes to mind, it was one of the games this last week where a receiver and a defensive back, I can't remember who it was, but they were going at it the whole game, and it was more than good, healthy competition. It was the whistle would blow. There was pushing, there was shoving, there was jawing, to the point where I was watching at the end of the game, as you know how players kind of come together from both teams. They give a hug, they give a high five, they exchange jerseys, whatever as they do. I was waiting for those two guys. It was so heated during the game that I was waiting for a fight to break out, you know, between those two guys on the sideline or the center of the field when, you know, after the final whistle blew. And I'm looking at them, and they're smiling and embracing, and I'm going, why could you not just bring out the best in each other by playing hard as opposed to, you know, all the jawing and the pushing, the shoving? You know, and you can only imagine what was going on there. I've often said that, you know, one of the great studies that should be done that just would capture the heart of our culture through athletics and how culture has changed is go back and, you know, start in 1950 and watch all of the, you know, professional football games and the college football games. We could even go to high school football games now. When someone scores a touchdown, how do they act? What do they do? It used to be, you know, toss, put the ball on the ground, give the ball to the ref. Now we got to go through this whole thing, you know, where you put on a big show, somebody gets sacked, the other, you know, you recover a fumble or an interception, you got these plays you got to do. I don't know. It's just not good what it's teaching our kids. And I think this feeds this as well. That's my soapbox.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that individual players are more about building a brand than, you know, being a part of a team. You know, that's the opportunity to soak in the spotlight for yourself, so to speak. And, you know, everybody takes advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think one thing I would add to it that, as well, in my context, so there's a bit of a tone of if a kid gets cut or doesn't get the play time that they parent and or student assume that they should get, we will hear often like, oh, I thought we were a Christian school. And there seems to be a little bit of a misunderstanding of like, being a Christian means fair. Being a Christian means considering everyone's feelings and making sure, like, and I think one thing that I do think sport does provide our students here at Trinity and I think just in life is, hey, this is actually not all about you. And I think learning to play on a team, I think learning to take criticism and be coached and to be disciplined, and you have discipline, all those things that actually I think sport does bring, because I have to have a few conversations, and I've had to, where that has said, you know, I thought we were Christian, whatever, I thought you were, you know, and so having that conversation of, okay, so what about has taken place is unchristlike. Your son's ego is bruised, and, you know, like, you get to kind of talk about those things. But I do think that creeps in quite a bit and I think sport provides those opportunities for growth.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I want to rifle off. As I'll be thinking about this, here are some topics, some doctrines, some issues that all of us in youth ministry need to be dealing with our students, educating parents on, maybe even getting everybody in our church culture who's a leader, whether it's the senior pastor right down to the children's ministry person. We need to be unified in addressing these things to push back on some of these errors that are occurring. And I'll just say this before we break. I want to share this little anecdote. I remember someone who was I was supervising this guy in ministry 40 years ago. He was doing his student ministry. He was in seminary, and I was his field site guy. And Tim Keller happened to be his guy on staff at the school who was overseeing him. And this young guy said to me one time, he said, "Well, you know what I heard him say?" And now I understand, you know, because you hear so much from Keller now. But Keller had said, you know, to this guy, "You tell me who or what it is you daydream about, and I'll tell you who or what your God is. You tell me who or what we could adapt this. You tell me who or what you spend your time on. You tell me who or what you spend your money on." And so I think one of the main issues here is idolatry. One of the things about the Little League World Series that really struck me, we were there for four games. We watched the first two innings of every game, and then we walked around. It was hot. There were some things to do, and there were some marketing things set up. Dick's Sports was set up. A suntan lotion place was set up. And Easton and Adidas both had tents set up where you could go in and get pins. They limited what you could get with that, but also, like, you can try out their equipment. And that was the equipment that was being used, provided for most of the Little League players during the game. So you saw that, I can't remember what the name of that bat was, the Fire, whatever it is, the Easton Fire, but it's a multicolored bat. And, I went online to look at that, and it ranges in price from, I think it's like $300 to $400 for this bat. And I looked at the promotional stuff. So I'm going to read this to you very quickly. It's just a couple of sentences. So the four things that they advertise: double barrel technology creates a lower barrel compression and massive sweet spot. We're talking about 8, 9, 10-year-old kids now. And the price of the bat. Connection Max utilizes an elastomer connector to interlock the handle to the barrel, eliminating vibration for optimal feel. Enhanced grip. Our FlowTac grip combined with Power Boost soft knob provides hitters with the best comfort, feel, and control. I mean, I was just trying to hold a bat at that age, you know, when you think about it. But here's the last one, and this was quite telling. The OptiFlex handle. Each bat size's handle flex is specifically engineered to, listen to this, the elite travel ball athlete. And so there it is, Matt. There is the hook for the parent, and they're spending this money. Now, Easton has another bat. Well, last year they had a bat called the Dub. And I don't know if anyone's aware of this. And a 27-inch bat, if you played baseball, that's little kids, right? That Dub, the price of that Dub for a Little League bat is $500. I was in line up there with a coach, a youth coach. He was behind me, and we were waiting in the Eastern line to get a pin, and I was telling him about how my grandsons talk about these bats. It's not so much about the game. I need one of those bats. Papa, I want one of those. Well, I'm not buying that for you. I mean, they weren't asking me to buy it. This guy told me he was coaching 10-year-olds this last year, and I think six parents of the 10-year-olds on his team each laid down $500 for one of those dub bats. Six of them. So that's $3,000 that went to Easton. He said that four of them by midseason had already split and were no longer usable. And they, those parents went on and bought something else. And I'm just thinking, this is where it's gotten out of hand, just a matter of idolatry and stewardship. So when we come back, we're going to talk about all the issues and then some practical responses to equip those of you who are youth workers and parents to think strategically about this and push back on this with the truths of the gospel. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Our mission here at CPYU is to increase the ability of home and church to nurture children and teens into a lifetime of biblically faithful, whole-life Christian discipleship. That's why we've created our free weekly Youth Culture Field Report. It's a weekly resource filled with the latest youth culture news, research, trends, biblically sound analysis, and more. If you want to lead the children and teens you know and love through the rapidly changing world of today's youth culture, you need to subscribe to this free weekly resource. It's easy. Just go to cpyu.org and scroll down to find the subscription link. Subscribe to the CPYU Youth Culture Field Report today so that we can walk alongside you in your efforts to nurture kids in the Christian faith. Well, as we finish up this conversation with these guys about sports and spectating and a Christian approach to that, a Christian approach to being a sports parent or being a player, and what we, for specifically for those in youth ministry, but we know parents are listening as well, you know, what are the kinds of things that we need to address? What are the underlying issues? You know, what a lot of what we've talked about is symptomatic of deeper issues, symptomatic of deeper spiritual issues, and certainly there are things that we can step out on and address in our teaching in kind of a prophetic way, I'd say, you know, to help young parents get a good handle on this and not go down roads they shouldn't go down in a preventive way, you know, to set them up to have some strategies to keep them from going down. But then also we've got a lot of folks, students and their parents as well, who are locked in on this, and there are redemptive strategies that we can use. And I certainly think, you know, teaching, preaching the Word of God on what the underlying issues are is what's at the root of correction, because the Holy Spirit uses that. And I do want to go back to, you know, something Jason said earlier, every square inch, right? Christ is sovereign over all, and our athletics. I mean, there are other areas of life, spheres of life that this happens, academics, you know, our work. We don't, you know, even as adults, we're not thinking about doing this to the glory of God under the lordship of Christ. But certainly with athletics, we need to do this. So, guys, what do you have in terms of some of the strategies? Like, you're a youth worker. I want to teach on this. I want to get our pastor to preach on this. I want to address this particular topic with biblical truth. What do you got?
Yeah, I think a couple of things that I would suggest is, we've touched on the identity piece, which I think is really important, but I think there's a way to model healthy passions. I think specifically for parents, I think we can model to our kids what we're truly passionate about, just in the way that we live our day-to-day lives and the spiritual disciplines that we incorporate and are passionate about. I think for youth workers, there's an opportunity to kind of use sport as, like, for lack of a better term, like a discipleship kind of lab or discipleship teaching points, and talk about the things that we've touched on, with whether it's humility or perseverance or teamwork and that type of thing. But also, I see a real opportunity to challenge idolatry clearly and consistently. I think that's our responsibility as youth workers, to be honest. And I also think whether it's, you know, even just in youth ministry or even as a church, there's that opportunity to equip our families to discern and how to do that. I think teaching families to have boundaries in place that we don't compromise on, and whatever your filter might be for that, And ultimately, we're, you know, there's an opportunity to use sport as mission and to fulfill that great commission. And if your family's going to participate in sport, that it's not just an activity that you do to elevate your child to some sort of status, but actually there's an eternal perspective here for us to use these opportunities for the glory of God and the good of our fellow man.
Yeah, if I can jump in there, Tim, one thing you made me think of is a dilemma that many youth workers have, and that is you've got kids who are gifted athletically, who do have a promise and who have been equipped with these gifts and abilities, you know, just like our kids would have musical abilities, academic abilities, whatever they may be, abilities in the trades, using your hands for certain things. And we want them to develop them. We don't want to discourage that. And so when it comes to sports, because sports takes kids away from church activities so many times, I do think there's a difference between a student consistently missing worship, the gathering of God's people on a Sunday morning, and perhaps not being able to participate during football season on a Wednesday night Bible study. This is my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about it, but my sense is rather than, you know, sort of blackballing them or, you know, seeing them as some kind of scourge and treating them as less because you're not here for everything, we need to go out to them and be with them and encourage them to develop their gifts and abilities, not according to the cultural narrative as it relates to sport, but according to God's narrative and God's story and God's plan for how to best do that. And I like how you said discipleship. I see that as discipleship, you know, and equipping kids to be in the world using their gifts and abilities, but not of the world. What are some other things you guys came up with?
One that, actually a couple that I think of. One is just being transparent with the parents. Like some of the things I'd shared earlier, I just know as a dad myself, some of the struggles and temptations that I've faced watching my son go through sports, and also putting into practice the fruits of the Spirit. And I think one is patience. Of how sports, the redemptive and transformational piece of sports and athletics can be growing our kids' character development with patience and putting in the right amount of time, being patient with other people, being patient with teammates, with coaches, and coming from the top down, from the parents to the kids, being able to pass that along to our kids. And reminding them, and I think it was Tim may have mentioned, Tim or Jason, one of you guys talked about joy, just losing the joy of being able to participate. And I just as a former athlete myself, I just remember how much joy I had in the locker room. And those guys are still my best friends, still guys that I talk to and spend time with. We were in each other's weddings. But there was a lot of good that I learned through the vehicle of football that I had Christian coaches, and I'm watching this unfold in my son's life now, of how they're using the platform of football to shape men and the hearts of men. So that's a really good thing too, that it doesn't always have to be the negative. It doesn't always have to be something bad.
Yeah. Related to that, Jay, the joy, Chris, you mentioned something during the break about a statistic you had found about when kids pop out of sports, the average age.
Yeah. The average age that teens, or kids, drop out of sports is 10 and a half across pretty much all, you know, the average across all sports.
Yeah. And one of the things that's related to that, that's a statistic I've heard for years now, and I don't think it's changed much, is by the time they reach the age of 13, kids who are involved in youth sports, 70% drop out. And a big reason for that is obviously, I mean, there's lack of interest, maybe lack of ability, maybe it's getting too competitive, but there's a lot of screaming and yelling. And, you know, I just can't take it anymore. It's that joy factor. Other things?
Yeah, I'm always repeating this word, intentionality. Our Christianity is to be intentional. We are to be intentional Christians everywhere we are, intentional gospel people everywhere we are. And so that works both ways. For students, I think And hitting on what you were pointing to, Walt, with the grand narrative of redemption, a good question of intentionality is, what is this for? I know that's not the best grammatical question, but that is a good question. So a question that we need to keep in front of our students is, what is sports good for? And if you think about sports being the means to an end, we need to properly identify the end. And if the end is at all centered on us, then sports is going to go south. Sports is not going to be a positive formation experience like Jay is talking about. That end has to be bigger than that. So just teaching our students, and just in a general sense, helping them catch a big view of the gospel, helping them to understand that the end is the gospel, that the end is all that God is up to in the world. And we begin to ask the question, so in light of that, what is sports good for? And I think that that will set us up to participating in, posturing toward sports and everything else that we do in a positive way, in a way that we can be intentionally Christian there. For parents, I think it is that turns into the question of, what do you want for your kids? And our participation in sports and our kids' participation in sports, I think, is one of those wonderful opportunities for us to assess our hearts really quickly. And it will expose to us, if our greatest desire for our kids is their success, their happiness, then our posture towards sports is not going to be healthy. But if our greatest desire for them is to be conformed into the image of Christ, to experience the fullness of redemption, to understand the full expression of the gospel, then we begin to look at sports as good for that. And so we're going to help our kids lean into the more formative aspects like Jay was talking about. Yeah, that's one of the sad things just in our world in total, is we are losing this sense of formation. We are losing any desire for formation. If anything is difficult, we're checking out because technology is making it too easy. And transfer portals allows me to have what I want now instead of being pushed into this difficult process that's going to build resiliency. And we want our kids to be resilient. This crosses over really well with the anxious generation and stuff that's being said there even. Are we helping our kids press into what is hard? Do they have a good understanding of suffering and difficulty?
Yeah, that's good.
And is our greatest desire for them to be formed into the image of Christ? And, you know, that, again, sports allows us to have an assessment in our hearts that's going to expose that pretty quickly.
Yeah. So just for the sake of time here, I'm going to rifle through a little bit of a list I threw together. I'm sure you guys would agree with all this, and I wish we had more time to do this. When I'm done with this, we're going to hit a couple of resources real quick, so if you have any ideas. Talking about Sabbath, talking about worship, I think as a resource, Jason, I mentioned it earlier, your parent prompt, which we will include a link to, as with everything else we've talked about here, on the page for the player for this particular episode at cpyu.org, your parent prompt on youth sports and church participation is very, very good, just helping us to understand our priorities and how our practices really pull back the curtain on our hearts to see that and how to change it. That's a good one. So Sabbath, worship, anger, pride, vanity, envy, how we spend our time, how we spend our money, you know, what is good stewardship of time and money. I think about boasting, arrogance, and humility, teaching on that, you know, and just the fruit of the Spirit, as Jay said. The issue of vicarious living that our parents do through their kids, and, you know, social media has really ramped that up, where you're posting everything about your kid and all the rewards. And, you know, it's one thing to be happy for your kids, but to say, hey, look at me, look at me, look at my kids is another. So just nurturing kids. And then mortifying our sin. You know, I got to learn, if this is a problem, what does it mean to grow in my relationship with the Lord and sanctification and mortify sin? So those are just a few of the things there that I think are important. What about resources? Anything you guys can think of that's been helpful to you? Maybe a book or a podcast or something? Anything at all?
One that I've been enjoying listening to for about a year now is Access the Walk. It's a podcast, I believe. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but it's interviewing typically college athletes. And most of them have stories of something, an injury, coming back from an injury, or losing a spot on a team, something like that. But in their faith, it's sharing their testimony too. Also their faith stories, whether they started in high school or once they get on the college campus as a student athlete.
Good. Others.
Yeah. It's not necessarily a book that was specifically about sports, but really helpful for me was Keller's book, Every Good Endeavor, just kind of more about work in particular. But I think just that there's some principles in there that I found really helpful. And then Desiring God had a blog, the Wonderful Dangerous World of Sports. That was another helpful resource that I read.
Jason, anything on your list?
Yeah, I would add two just general ones. Again, not specific to sport, but I'd made reference of this book in an earlier conversation today. But Gene Veith's God at Work.
Yeah.
Again, it focuses on work, but he is really helpful in helping us to see the many vocations that we are called to and how we navigate those spaces, how we view every vocation. And I think for our students, beginning to think that way, that as an athlete, that's a vocation that you are called to, that God has equipped you to. So how do you navigate that would be good. And then there's a really good, just thinking about identity and helping our kids anchor their identity in Christ and what all that means. There's a great study by Matthias Media called The Course of Your Life that I've led several times. And it is always beneficial to those who are a part of that, just to understand why we were created and what does it mean now that we have been purchased for the mission of God with the blood of Christ. And it just helps me think in every sense in my life, who I am and who I'm called to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I love how you guys are, those last couple of resources relate to calling and vocation. I think about Oz Guinness's book, The Call. But in addition to that, you know, this is one of the topics we're going to hit at the Northeast Youth Ministry Summit. My friend Luke Bobo, who's done lots of work on this, is coming in to teach. And so pretty excited about that. We've had Luke on our podcast before. So, all right, let me give you some real quick here as well, and then we'll finish out with these. There's a new book, which I have not read. I've skimmed through it. It looks good. I'm going to read it. We're going to have these guys on the podcast in the future. It's published by the Good Book Company. It's called Spiritual Game Plan by Graham Daniels and Johnny Reed, Competing with Joy and Godliness. I love that subtitle. It relates to a lot of what we've done here. In terms of coaching, an older book, well, it's a few years old, and man, this one just is so good, The Matheny Manifesto, A Young Manager's Old School Views on Success in Sports and Life. Mike Matheny, who became the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, had been a player, and then was a youth coach. And man, this thing is just so good for parents and for coaches as well. Joe Ehrman, his book, Inside Out Coaching, How Sports Can Transform Lives. And I would add to that, another book by Jeffrey Marks called The Season of Life, or Season of Life, which tracked a high school football team where Joe Ehrman was a volunteer coach. And their whole thing, I mean, winning state championships in Maryland, but their whole goal was to turn boys into men. And a lot of Christian perspective there. And then lastly, Take Back the Game, How Money and Mania Are Ruining Kids' Sports and Why It Matters by Linda Flanagan. Her axe to grind is first person because she's a coach, she's an athlete, and she's a sports parent, and she found herself doing all the things that she's addressing and wanting to turn around in this book. Very, very good. So there's lots of resources out there for you, and we'll post all of these things, links to all these, Chris will, on the player page underneath the player for this particular episode of Youth Culture Matters. You'll find them all at cpyu.org. So if there's anything we missed mentioning, we'll add those as soon as the podcast is posted. So, guys, thank you so much. I know I'm going to be talking to you all more before we see each other in March at the Northeast Youth Ministry Summit. But if I can use some sports lingo here, all these faces I'm looking at, I'm glad all you guys are on my team. I'm glad we're all on the same team. I know that sounds corny, but I really mean it. It's a blessing to know you all and to hear your wisdom. So thanks for guiding all of us. And to all of you who are listening, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.